Welcome back, everyone, to another exciting episode of The Money Seat with your host, Ross Kraus, Certified Financial Planner, or CFP for short. The show where your questions get answered, and I don't have any time to prepare for them. So kind of put me on the hot seat here. Once again, my name is Ross Kraus. I am a Certified Financial Planner, helping people of all ages, ethnicities, genders, all walks of life, with their money troubles, both simple and complicated, so you don't have to. So if you want to call in and have a question and be brave, we're at 425-373-5527. Again, that's 425-373-5527. For those not as brave, you can email me at ross.kraus@lpl.com. ross.krause at lpl.com, or go to my website, rosskraus.com, and submit a question there as well, or submit as many questions as you want, and we could get some more questions in as well. Anyways, I'd like to recap a little bit of what we discussed last week for anyone who heard the episode with JD who came in, or I guess that would have been part two if anyone's heard that, or if anyone heard that one and didn't hear anyone before, I encourage you to go back, kknw.com, and listen to part one and part two of the JD episode. The reason why they're two parts is because it's, you know, they're designed for follow-ups, and I think I'm kind of very intrigued. Stacy, who sponsors the show, was the one who came up with the idea of, instead of having a caller come in and asking questions and kind of doing a one-off thing with everyone, maybe it'd be cool to follow someone over time with their questions, see their progress, see how their questions change over time. And I thought that was a great idea. And so JD is kind of he's not our guinea pig, but he's kind of our fun person here who did an episode 3-4 months ago. He came back last week, updated himself on the progress, gave me a lot more credit than I deserved. To be honest with these things, most of the credit is on the person doing the stuff. I could help a little bit, I could give him guidance, but it really comes down to you. And I think that's important when you listen to it, that JD doesn't feel like he's doing a lot, but he is. And to be honest, a lot of people, as long as you have the passion and you want to put in the effort and the work, asterisk, very important, this is hard work, this is dedication, this is discipline, this is not easy to do this, especially from him and a lot of other people who start with not only no knowledge, but probably no assets, you're right, not a lot of investments already. But if you have those determination, those qualities, you're going to get it done. That's really it. And JD, if you're listening, you've done a great job so far. I'm excited to bring you back next year for a part three and kind of keep bringing you back and slowly updating you and feeling how you're doing and see how the questions and everything changes. Because we're still in phase one or phase 1B for JD. And it'll be really exciting to kind of see him evolve and move into phase two and three. And you could see as an audience how that really works when you work with someone, how you do this and really how things progress over time. While it feels like you're doing a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, all of a sudden you've done a lot over a few years. So anyways, I encourage everyone to go back, go to the website, listen to those first few parts, get to know them, and then you'll be able to be all caught up for the next one. So anyways, we're going to be back to our kind of regular-ish formatting today. I have a texted in question for someone, and it's more of a, usually I get questions, right? But this is like more like a case study, which I kind of like because this reminds me of my CFP exam where I had, I don't know, 170 questions. And all of them would be like basic, you know, a little A, B, C, or D. What's the answer to this simple question? But then there'd be like a giant case and you'd read all about a family and their life and what they want to do. And then you'd have like 20 questions about estate and tax and insurance and investments and retirement planning all around this one case. So this is kind of a little bit that case, not quite that in depth, and we're going to go through that and look at it from multiple perspectives, and then I'll give everyone a little bit of update next week because we're going to do something a little bit different based on where we are in Washington and kind of something that I think is a little bit more current. So let's get into the case, because once again, this time flies and I want to leave some time at the end to wrap everything up. So this was a question from Chase, real name, not who knows, but I like the name. Here's my situation from Chase. I'm currently a senior in college. My parents have a deal with me and my siblings that they will pay for undergrad with the assumption that we've helped by way of merit scholarships awards. Not uncommon. When it comes to grad school or higher education, we're on our own. Also not uncommon. A lot of people I talk to, friends I know, clients, similar situation where they get some or decent amount of help from family for undergrad, but then they're on their own afterwards. I'm going for a fifth year to get my master's. Besides scholarships and merit aid, what's the best way to pay for this fifth year of school? Should I take loans or a loan from my parents? I feel like school loans are a drag, but are good for establishing credit, and I don't want to lean on my parents. However, they'd probably give me a better interest rate. Yes, good point. This whole topic of getting higher ed degrees to be more competitive in the job market, paying for them, and being able to afford living expenses is one of my peers and I are constantly talking about. Help. All capitalized H-E-L-P. So I think that's great. I'm going to look at this from two point of views. Let me tackle it from your point of view, the student. It's like you feel like you're stuck between, what is it, a rock and a hard place. That's the expression. Is that... right now, an undergrad degree for a lot of fields, not all, but a lot, aren't worth as much as they used to. So then you have to go to grad school. There's rising costs of everything, so things are costing way more. And then how are you supposed to pay for grad school and ask parents to do that when they've already given you so much by providing education? There's a lot less merits and stuff out there for grad school. And then you're also on your own and living and being an adult as opposed to maybe being more on campus in your undergrad. So it's like you're an adult and you want to go to grad school, but you have to pay for it and you need money to live places. But if you don't do this, then you're not going to get as good of a job, and in the long run, it'll hurt you, right? So what do I do? Help, right? So that's a very good question. So from the... I saw this. The degree is accounting. So I was just going to say a lot of this depends on the degree. So an accounting degree is pretty important to get a master's degree, to go to get a CPA exam, stuff like that. So thank you very much. I saw that. So how do you approach this situation from a young person's point of view? Well, let's look at the student loan specifically. The very first question was, what's the best way to pay for this fifth year of school? Should I take school loans or a loan from my parents? Well, assuming, and this is same for both sides, assuming that it's not going to financially put anyone into debt or the parents aren't going to have to take their own loan out, it's probably best to take the loan from the parents. There's a few different reasons why. One is there's not like a structured interest rate or, you know, like payback rules to it. If you take out loans, you have to pay back a certain amount within a certain time, and you have to pay interest on it, right? So if you'd borrow $50,000, you might actually be paying back 60 or 65 or 70 after 5, 10, 15 years, whatever the duration is. So if your parents are like, hey, we're just going to give you 50 grand, and then you pay us back the 50 grand later in life, when you earn it, that obviously makes the most sense, because one, you're borrowing now, you're not paying any interest on it, and it gives you the flexibility to kind of, okay, you don't have to force anything. Maybe you don't have to take a job that you don't want. I've seen this with a lot of people out of college where they have these interest rates, they have these loans, and they feel obligated or pressured to take the first job that pays them somewhat high, or a job that they might not like as much but pays them a higher salary because they have these debts and these loans and these obligations to pay back. So assuming you're in a situation with a family member that you're not pressured to give anything back in order of interest rates, there's a lot of benefits, right, to taking it from your parents. One is you should be saving money on interest. Two, you should have more flexibility and freedom to pay it back. The last one obviously is that you don't pay it back, the consequences should be less, right? once again, if there are going to be consequences and you discuss this with your parents about not paying them back, then that might change the discussion. But otherwise, if it's a, okay, you know, we get it, or things happen, as opposed to the student loans where there are consequences if you don't pay your student loans, right? And so you're talking about, I feel like loans are a drag, true, but are good for establishing credit. Meh. I've heard this a lot, especially from young people who are always so worried about, oh, establishing credit and building up my credit score. And I think a lot of that stuff is a little overrated, to be honest. It's nice to have a good credit score. It's nice to have a great one. But as long as you don't have a bad one, you really can do mostly what you want. These decisions are much bigger than just establishing credit, right? If you want a good way to establish credit, I just had a client and we had a whole meeting about credit cards. That's what we did. We went over how many is appropriate, what you currently have, what's a good limit on it, how they work in terms of, well, it's not like a debit card where you have $1,000 in the bank and you give them $50 in the debit card and now you have $950 in the bank. You could have $1,000 in your bank, and if your credit card limit's $5,000, you could spend $5,000, right? And all of a sudden, you're -4 in the hole, and the credit card company doesn't care. That's how they make money. So you have to be very careful, but you have to pay off the full amount, right? You want to make sure that what you're spending is below what you can pay, because if you have leftover amounts every month, and if you have a $5,000 credit card balance and pay off three, and you have two left, you're paying 20, 25% interest on that. That's huge every month, and that's what kills you. But that's the best way to establish credit, to be honest. That's what I did for me. I mean, I didn't really have much of a credit score until I opened up a credit card. I had one for cash, one for travel. That was it. So if you're looking for a great way to establish in credit, open a credit card. Seriously, get a $1,500, $2,000, $3,000 limit. That's more than what you should need every month, and have that going. So I wouldn't even focus on that. I'd throw that out the window, the credit side, as a benefit for a student loan as well. And then the last one is, I don't want to lean on my parents. However, they'd probably give me a better interest rate, right? So the leaning on your parents is a very good point, is that we feel like they've supported us, at least in this situation, for the people who are in this situation looking at this, who have, you know, we have some privilege and we have fantastic opportunities from the parents to support us, which I know a lot of people don't. But in this case, you feel like they've done a lot, or they've done enough, or more than they should have, and you don't want to be unappreciative. So borrowing more feels like you're doing too much. But while I would say that's probably realistic and true, your parents are probably willing to do most anything, especially for these things that are just so important, to give you a leg up. And sometimes, and we'll get to this later, could be at their detriment. So I would say it's not bad to have the conversation. Say, hey, what is this grad school going to cost? Okay, what's the extra income I'm going to earn because I'm going to have a master's degree in accounting or the law degree or whatever degree you're going for as opposed to an undergrad? Okay, what's a realistic job I could expect? Okay, well, maybe we could set up some payment plan. You know, maybe I'm not going to be paying you like a fixed interest rate every month, but maybe I could try to throw in $50 or $100 a month and kind of slowly do that over time till you get your situation ready. But I don't think it's terrible to have a conversation. At this point in life, you're an adult. Whether you think so, whether your parents want to accept it, you're an adult. You're probably in your early 20s, maybe mid-20s, you're getting grad school, you're going off on your own, you're getting a job, you're an adult now. So this is an adult conversation to have with your parents, and vice versa. If the parents are the one initiating this, and they're going to be doing the research and doing all those things that I just brought up, it could be different based on you know who's doing the parent or the kid. But let's say that from the parent side, you should also bring this up as well. And do some research too. I know interest rates are very low, so I couldn't quote you on what a interest rate would be on a student loan. But when I was going to school, it would have been 4, 5, 6, 7%. Right? That's a lot different than if you're like, oh, we could get a $50,000 loan for 1.5 or 2. Well, all right, then maybe you just you use the bank, right? At that point, so you got to do some interest. but also it wouldn't be bad to just have the conversation. I think your child and you would learn a lot about it. Okay, this is what grad costs, and by the way, it could affect which school you go to and how much they cost, right? You might be like, the parents will say, hey, we can afford to give you the loan if you go to a school that costs X, but if you're going to go to the school that costs, you know, Y, which is going to be more than X, then you're going to be either responsible for the difference or whatever, right? That's a very important conversation to have, because I think it's important when you apply to schools and when you go to know this beforehand and not kind of like, okay, now I got into, you know, this school and I'm definitely going there, and now let's figure out the money side. No. That's not a good plan. That's kind of like, okay, I'm going to retire when I'm 66. Now let's see if I have enough. That also doesn't work, right? So great idea would be, let's figure it out, right? There might be I do need to go to grad school for this. But what I've learned, and I have a master's in accounting, by the way, and an MBA, is that it's similar in law school, and I think similar in for a doctor, but I'm not quite positive, that there's these like top elite schools that are like, everyone knows what they are, you know, 5, 10, maybe 15 top elite schools that everyone will look at the resume and it'll be like, oh yeah, you're going to get a job just because you went there. And then after that, there's like 50 to like 75 schools that are all very good, right? But they might not be the elite schools that are still going to help you out a lot. And then below that, a lot of stuff is just kind of like maybe worth it, maybe not. And a lot of times it's if you're stuck in that, like if it's not an elite school, a lot of times it actually isn't worth spending some of that private tuition for some of those places than it would be to just go to that public school that's cheaper, that instead of it being maybe ranked, you know, 20, it's ranked 30 or 40. I know for business, it's not a big deal, especially if you're going to work. A lot of the stuff is connections. So if you're a business, if you're an accountant, one of the values is, for me, I had a business degree from Northeastern in Boston. So the valuable part about that was staying in Boston and working there and knowing other people who had Northeastern degrees and networking and making connections. That's what business is about. So if you're going to have a business degree, you probably want to go to a school in an area that you want to live or at least be in for a little bit as well. So I know some friends, they went to Indiana and then they went back to Indiana for grad school. A lot of big schools do that. So think about all those things, because it matters a lot. You know, if I had decided to go out to school out here in Seattle, it would have made a lot of sense, make sense to then stay there, right? So think about that, the cost, right? It might be like, oh, it'll be fun to go out to blah, 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 and New York will be expensive, but if you're not going to stay around there and use that degree there and it's not a top elite school, it's not really worth it, to be honest. You need to make those decisions as well. But anyways, I digressed a little bit, but that's kind of what to look at. There's a lot of stuff to look at. You should have those conversations together. You're both adults as well, and figure out the money, if it's worth it, where it is, how your industry looks, what your parents could afford, what you might get for scholarships. Remember, there's also like, I don't know, a part-time job as an opportunity. Remember, you can contribute too, right? You're also an adult, right? If you want to drive for Uber, if you want to make baked goods, if you want to custom make jewelry or start an Etsy shop at part-time or do a YouTube channel or Instagram or whatever and make, you know, $500, $1,000 a month and use that to contribute, that's also an option too. Your parents might be like, school costs 50 grand. We could give you 30, come up with the 20. Or we can give you 30 to go to one of the good schools, but if you want to go to an elite school, you got to come up with that $30,000 or $40,000 difference, and then you work for that. Also, once again, a great idea as well. Those are options. Not easy. Trust me, I have master's degrees. I know how difficult it is for that, but those are options as well. I do encourage people to try to take as little physical debt out of college as possible. Physical debt means it's on paper, right? If it's with your parents and it's just kind of an agreement between them, that's separate. The reason is that it's a lot easier to start off with no debt. I can't tell you how many people I work with who are younger, and the conversation of, okay, so how much debt do you have? What do you owe? And if they have student loans, if they have stuff they're paying, One, there's less money for them to start saving for their 401k, for their retirement, for, I don't know, buying a house, for all the stuff they want to do in their 20s. You're about to find out, Chase, that your 20s are very expensive. Weddings, possibly babies, moving different places, traveling the world. It's expensive. Dating people, relationships, yeah, it's going to be expensive. And having a fixed expense of $250, $300, $500 a month, because if it's a student loan, that's going to kill you. Trust me, I've seen it. People are like, oh, man, I really wish I had planned that student loan better. As opposed to the conversations I have with people are, do you have any student loan debt? Or they'll be like, yeah, it's, you know, 5 or 10 or 15 or 20, or it's a very small amount where it doesn't affect their life. All of a sudden, the world's like their oyster. It literally is, okay, you have this degree, you have this job, and it's like, ooh, you could just do so much more. And I think that's also part of having a conversation as a family together about this stuff, because you should be looking at some of those things, being like, okay, if I come out of school and I go to this school and I have this degree and I could expect this job and I'm going to live here, you could already kind of have a pretty good idea of what your finances will roughly look like. And then figure out, well, if I take out this student loan, it's going to cost me $350 a month, but I'm making this amount and blah, 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 right? And if you don't want to do that, I could, you know, anyone else can help you with that, or a math person can. You should be able to figure out pretty quickly if you still have income left over to live your life. Because a lot of this goes back to that you might have a certain school in mind, but there's a good chance, or there's a chance it might not be worth it based on location. Based on that specific, because remember, undergrad is different than graduate school. Graduate school isn't necessarily the school as a whole, but it's all about that specific graduate program you're getting, as opposed to undergrad, which is more of just generally how is that school overall perceived. The graduate is, well, how is that journalism school perceived? How is the business school perceived? Where are their connections? All that stuff. So those are the things to look at. And you should figure out what's worth it and what's not, have a conversation. And then once you've done all that, know how that's going to work, then you should be able to figure out, okay, how much is it going to cost? Can my parents help me? Is there a difference? And then if there is, how can I fill that gap in? Is student loans worth it? How much is it going to be? And how much is the interest rate? Or should I just get a job, grin and bear it, kind of tough it out for a year or two and come out better the other side? Because remember, it's very easy to get short-sighted for this stuff, but the whole reason why you're getting a grad degree is for the long term, right? It's a long-term investment. So think about it like that. This is a long-term investment. And when we make long-term investments, we have to make sure that we have all the proper research, the knowledge, and everything going into it. From a parent's point of view, a lot of it is the same. And if you have a kid, and some kids might want to do this research and some might not, I would say you should then. Someone, whether it's the parent or the kid, needs to take the lead and do some of this research. Or if you can't do that, there might be a guidance counselor, or maybe if you're already working with a financial person, they might be able to help you in a one-off meeting on this stuff. But you should definitely do as much research on this as possible before you make those decisions as well, and have a more informed conversation. So with that, hopefully I answered all your questions. I know you're stressed. Trust me, I went through this about, I'm not going to date myself, but about 10, 12 years ago. I didn't do the elite. Northeastern's very good, but it's not one of those elite. And I'm happy I didn't spend the extra $50,000, $100,000 to do that, make my connections, stayed in my city for 4 or 5 years. And did that for the business side with the degree. And I'm very happy that I did that. I would say just make sure to do some research. But also look at it as an exciting thing, right? Don't try to be like, oh, my God, I have to get a master's degree. Otherwise, everyone's going to pass me. Or I have to go to this school because it's the best. Just kind of understand that that's not necessarily the case. If you're an accountant and you get your CPA exam, that's going to be much more desirable than a master's degree in accounting. Trust me, I have a master's degree in accounting. I don't have a CPA. If I had the opposite, I'd be much more desirable candidate as in the accounting industry. Trust me on that. So getting that master's degree is important, but there's more important things actually in the hiring world, in the accounting world, to help you move up than just where you had that degree from as well. So keep that in mind, that if it sometimes if it comes to money, go to one of those schools that might be in the 20 to 50 to 70 tier, especially if it's going to be cheaper and it's in the right place you want to live. That's going to be just as valuable with the connections and where you are and saving the money. So with the last few minutes we have left, and thank you very much, Chase, for the question. Great job. I know you and millions of people who are graduating college or about to or just did are thinking about this and struggling this as well. So with the last few minutes, I want to set up next week. I'm going to do something slightly different. We're not going to have any questions or callers. I had a client who had me a question about the new required Washington long-term care plans and enrollment and a tax that comes with everyone that's coming. And I think it'd be good to just go into that. Someone asked me a question about general long-term care insurance, and I kind of went into that a little bit, but I just want to dedicate next week to go a little bit more into that, and then obviously about how it impacts you, Washingtonians, how that tax works, and if this is your situation and it's a little bit dire, how you should approach it and what you need to know. I'm hoping I could get to it all in 30 minutes or 27 minutes. I'm not sure, but I'm going to do my best. But that's next week's show. So if you have any questions about long-term care, that'd be a great time to ask it. Otherwise, hope you had a great time here at the Money Seat. Once again, I'm your host, Ross Krause, and I look forward to doing long-term care with you guys next week for another episode of the Money Seat. Take care, Seattle. Bye.